afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the ICMA briefing call on implications for ICMA members of the U.K. vote to leave the EU. My name is Rosie, and I'll be your coordinator for today's conference. The duration of the presentation, you'll be on listen only. If you have questions, you can submit them via email. If at any time you need assistance, please press star zero on your telephone keypad, and you'll be connected to an operator. I'll now hand you over to Martin Cech to begin today's conference. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Rosie, and good day, everybody, and welcome to this call on the implications for IC members of the recent U.K. vote to leave the EU. You will have seen that on Friday morning we posted on our website a press statement and at the same time a rather more detailed working paper, which will be kept up to date as we go through this process. But clearly the result of the vote was not expected by the capital markets, although I think most participants have been preparing for this eventuality, but it's thrown up a tremendous number of uncertainties and questions. And as a result of that, we felt it was a useful exercise to hold this call to allow members to ask questions. There are a lot of people on the call. We had 680 registrations for this call, so we're not able to open it to oral questions. But what we are doing is having an email address. That's questions@icmagroup.org. And if we've already received some questions before the call, but if you have any questions during the call, please do send them through, and we will do our very best to answer them now. And if we can't answer them now, to answer them bilaterally as we go through the next days and weeks. Just a few comments very quickly before we start the call. As you're well aware that for five decades we've represented the international capital markets, we do encourage international capital market integration. We are, again, as you know, an international body headquartered in Switzerland with more than 500 members in 60 different countries, and about 20% of those members are located in the UK and about 50% in the rest of the EU, and the remainder in Asia, in Africa, some in Latin America, some in North America. And what we will do, we'll work actively with all of our members, large and small, sell side and buy side, through our various market practice and regulatory policy committees and our regional committees and all of our working groups, as appropriate, to help you prepare for the implications of Brexit. And our mission continues to be, on behalf of all of our members, whether they're in the EU or not in the EU, to promote resilient and well-functioning capital markets. As you know, we provide standard market documentation. We provide guidance on market practices, and these are very widely adopted in many areas of the international capital markets. And they may well need adjustment as the detail of the UK's withdrawal from the EU become clearer. We'll continue to review them and make sure that they are amended as and when needed in consultation with our members. We're also, it's clear, we will be working with the authorities in the UK, the EU, the euro area, and elsewhere to ensure that all of our members' views on the international capital markets are well represented. So I think with that, what I'd like to do is hand over to Paul Richards, the head of our Market Practice and Regulatory Policy Department. He has written the working paper and also the previous paper, which was in the earlier quarterly report, and is very well placed to talk through some of the implications as we see them of this vote to leave. And then after that, very briefly, I'd like to hand over to Lee Goss. Lee is our general counsel, and he will highlight some of the areas of potential change to our standard documentation and market guidelines. With that, Paul, if I may, I will hand over to you.
Thank you, Martin, very much. There is a great deal of uncertainty in capital markets following the UK vote in the referendum last Thursday to leave the EU, in other words, Brexit. The political implications are being played out in front of us, while the economic implications, both for the UK and the EU, have been addressed by HM Treasury and the Bank of England, the IMF and the OECD, among others. So I'm going to focus over the next 20 minutes or so on the practical implications for ICMA members in capital markets, and in particular on the implications for capital market regulation, and then hand over to our colleague Lee Goss, our General Counsel, to talk about ICMA standard market documentation. There are three key stages in the process of UK withdrawal from the EU: triggering Article 50, the withdrawal negotiations, and post-withdrawal. I will talk about each of these briefly in turn, and in each case, I will try to distinguish between what is reasonably clear and what is not yet clear. But it's important to understand that nothing about Brexit is certain. There is uncertainty about the outcome of the UK's negotiations to leave the EU, and there is uncertainty about the length of time needed to achieve an outcome. We are in uncharted waters, and we all know that markets hate uncertainty. It's clear that the first formal step towards UK withdrawal from the EU is for the UK to trigger Article 50 of the treaty. This is considered to be the only legal way to withdraw from the EU. It's for the UK to decide whether and when to trigger Article 50. But if it does not trigger Article 50, the UK cannot legally leave the EU. Article 50 has not previously been tested, but it should provide a period of up to 2 years for the UK to negotiate withdrawal with the European Council, acting by enhanced qualified majority voting with the consent of the European Parliament. If no agreement is reached, the UK will leave the EU 2 years after Article 50 is triggered, unless there is unanimity among the other 27 EU member states on extending the negotiations beyond 2 years. Before the EU referendum, the UK government said that in the event of a vote to leave the EU, the British people would expect the Article 50 process to start straight away. But it now appears that the UK government will not trigger Article 50 in practice until after a new Prime Minister is appointed in September. Triggering Article 50 is also ultimately dependent on majority support in the House of Commons. It's not clear whether the appointment of a new Prime Minister will or will not be followed by a general election in the UK. The interval between now and the autumn should allow the UK government the time to reach a common view about what approach to the withdrawal negotiations it should take. During this interval, the possibility of informal UK negotiations with the EU was flagged at one stage. However, the German Chancellor is reported to have said yesterday that there can be no talks on Brexit before the UK formally begins the process of leaving the EU. A second UK referendum has so far been ruled out by the UK government, but it's not clear whether this would necessarily bind a future government. There have been calls in the last few days for a second referendum once the terms of the UK's withdrawal have been negotiated. And in any case, the settlement terms will need to be approved in the UK Parliament. There are, of course, EU precedents for second referenda in the case of Denmark and Ireland, but they concern changes in the treaty. They did not involve withdrawal from the EU under Article 50. EU legislation, including new EU laws, will continue to be in effect in the UK until withdrawal. But it's not clear what would happen if the primacy of EU legislation in the UK were to be challenged in some way before UK withdrawal. For example, if the UK government were to limit the powers of the European Court of Justice in the UK, or to restrict free movement of people into the UK from the rest of the EU, for example, by unilaterally introducing an emergency brake. What is reasonably clear is that the safeguards negotiated by the UK government with the European Council on the 19th of February, if the UK voted to remain in the EU, will not apply now that the UK has voted to leave. Once Article 50 has been triggered, The second stage in the process is formal negotiations on withdrawal, during which the UK is expected to seek a new agreement on UK-EU relations in future. The main question affecting capital markets will be the terms of the UK's future access to the EU single market, given that the UK currently has unrestricted free access through the single passport as a member of the EU. HM Treasury has considered three main withdrawal options. The first option is for the UK to leave the EU and join the European Economic Area, like Norway. It's possible that the idea of an association agreement between the UK and the EU, floated by the German authorities, would be a variation on the Norwegian option, though that is not yet clear. The Norwegian option would mean that the UK would continue to have unrestricted free access to the EU single market through the single passport, though without a vote on new EU legislation. But it's important to note that the Brexit campaign has in general argued against adopting the Norwegian option on the grounds that the UK would not want to be subject to the European Court of Justice after leaving the EU, and that under the Norwegian option, it would not be possible to restrict immigration from the EU to the UK. Another potential hurdle for the UK is likely to be that Norway also contributes to the EU budget. The second option is for the UK to leave the EU and negotiate a bilateral trade agreement, like Canada or Switzerland. The Canadian option is currently thought to be more likely than the Swiss option. Switzerland has around 120 bilateral agreements with the EU, but the EU is not thought to be in favour of the Swiss option, particularly since 2014, when Switzerland voted to restrict EU immigration. The Canadian bilateral agreement with the EU has so far taken 7 years and still needs to be ratified by all 28 member states and the European Parliament, and it does not properly cover financial services. The President of the European Council estimated before the UK referendum that a new bilateral UK-EU agreement would take up to 7 years to complete, while the leaders of the Brexit campaign have said that they would like negotiations to be complete by the end of 2019, i.e. before the next scheduled date for a general election in the UK in 2020. Since the UK referendum, some EU member states have also said that they would be in favour of a quick solution to the UK withdrawal negotiations to reduce uncertainty and allow the EU to get on with other business. The third option is for the UK to leave the EU and trade under World Trade Organization rules, including trade in services through the General Agreement on Trade in Services. This option would not require prior agreement with the rest of the EU, but it would not be as favourable for the UK as unrestricted free access to the EU single market, and it's not clear what would happen in the case of financial services. To leave the EU, there would need to be substantial changes in UK legislation as a result in particular of repealing the UK European Communities Act 1972. In the case of capital markets, the regulations affecting the UK at present are largely set at EU level. EU regulations take the form of directives, which have to be transposed into UK law, and regulations, which apply directly in UK law without transposition. Although EU directives have been transposed into UK law, the UK government will need to take decisions about whether to keep them, modify them, or discard them. For example, how will MiFID II, which is due to be implemented on 3 January 2018, be handled? As EU regulations apply directly in the UK, they will cease to apply once the UK European Communities Act 1972 has been repealed. The question will then arise whether to replace them, and if so, on what basis. This will be the case, for example, with MiFIR. These issues relate not only to EU legislation at level one, but also to regulatory and implementing technical standards at level two. The regulatory and technical standards at level two are initially drawn up by the European supervisory authorities. It's not yet clear what future arrangements there will be between the European supervisory authorities, such as ESMA, and the UK. In terms of capital market regulations, the UK might have a better chance of negotiating favourable terms of access to the EU single market if existing EU legislation is grandfathered. This assumes that the UK will be willing to grant cross-border access to the EU on a reciprocal basis. Some EU legislation provides that the EU can deem third country regimes to be equivalent in exchange for reciprocity, though that does not apply in all cases. But the EU would be expected to insist that as a condition for future access to the EU single market on favourable terms, UK law should be kept up to date in conformity with EU law under the European Court of Justice. This might not be politically acceptable in the UK after the UK vote to leave. The Brexit campaign has stressed the importance of the primacy of UK law rather than the European Court of Justice and the importance of restricting immigration from the EU. Neither of these conditions are currently consistent with unrestricted free access to the EU single market. As trade agreements between the EU and the rest of the world are an EU rather than a national competence, new agreements would need to be negotiated between the UK and 53 other markets in the rest of the world unless the UK was going to trade solely under WTO rules. It's not yet clear whether these agreements with the rest of the world could be negotiated by the UK in parallel with its negotiations with the EU, or whether foreign trading partners like the US and China would insist on waiting until the outcome of the UK's negotiations with the EU were known. President Obama said in April that if the UK voted to leave the EU, a UK-US trade deal would be at the back of the queue and could take 5 to 10 years. As the UK has not been directly involved in trade negotiations for over 40 years, the UK will also need to train officials or hire experts to conduct them. The third stage in the process comes after withdrawal. It's not clear that leaving the EU will lead to less capital markets regulation in the UK than would otherwise be the case, for three main reasons. One is that the overall framework for capital market regulation is set at global level by the G20, and the UK will continue to participate in the G20, even though it's proposing to leave the EU. The second is that the UK would need to continue to comply with EU regulations if it wanted to obtain favourable terms of access to the EU single market after leaving the EU. And the third is that national regulators in the UK have been prominent in promoting strict regulation since the international financial crisis. There are a number of other important issues affecting capital markets to consider. One is that the EU's project for capital markets union is likely to be affected by UK withdrawal. There is a risk that capital markets will be fragmented between London as an international financial centre and the rest of the EU, particularly if the UK is no longer a member of the EU single market after withdrawal. The resignation last Saturday of Lord Hill as European Commissioner for Financial Stability, Financial Services and Capital Markets Union is not surprising in the circumstances, but it is a step backwards for capital market integration between the UK and the rest of the EU. Another issue is whether the ECB will take a different approach to counterparties in the UK with the objective of drawing euro markets and the euro market infrastructure, such as central counterparty clearing, from London into the euro area. There are also questions about UK membership of the EIB and the location of the EBA, and about whether the use of English law across the euro area for new financial contracts will be as widespread in future. and following the vote by the UK as a whole to leave the EU, but Scotland's vote to remain, there will be uncertainty in capital markets about whether Scotland will in due course hold a second referendum on leaving the UK, with a view either to remaining in the EU as an independent country when the UK leaves, or, if it has to leave first, subsequently applying as an independent country to rejoin the EU. So finally, planning for Brexit by financial institutions involved in the capital markets, both in the UK and outside the UK with their UK counterparties, is still difficult because of the uncertainty about what Brexit will involve. But planning by financial institutions is likely to include six different steps. Ensuring their setting out the risks of Brexit for their businesses. Checking whether their financial contracts will be affected, for example, to take account of changes in UK legislation after Brexit. Reviewing their future investment plans. Reviewing their future staff location plans. And considering the time needed to make any changes, particularly if they need to start while the UK-EU negotiations are going on. As Martin said, we at ICMA intend to keep in close touch with ICMA members and with the authorities in the UK, the EU, the euro area and elsewhere as the situation develops. I'm now going to hand over to my colleague, Lee Goss.
Thank you, Paul. In advance and anticipation of the referendum, ICMA conducted a review of four areas, including its internal governance, the secondary market rules and recommendations, the primary market handbook recommendations, and lastly, our standard documents, including the GMRA and supporting legal opinions. The conclusion was that the UK's expected exit from the EU should have no immediate effect and generally is not a short-term legal problem with respect to ICMA rules or ICMA-related contracts. Over time, and as matters become more clear, there may be a need to make some adjustments. However, these should be manageable. ICMA is happy to discuss with members after this call any questions on more specific legal issues.
Martin, back to you.
Thank you very much, Paul. Thank you, Lee. As we can see, there are just an enormous number of issues to consider over the next weeks and months and years, actually. Of course, at ICMA, we're not specifically aligned to any particular financial centre. We don't favour one over another, but we do like the idea of integrated capital markets. So we're going to be working very, very closely with all of you to do what we can to make sure that those improve, given the circumstances. We just to remind you, questions please on questions@icmagroup.org, and I will start with a couple of questions that we got from one of the larger banks yesterday. First one, what are the near-term actions planned by ICMA towards UK and EU policymakers and regulators, e.g. to understand the UK government's plan on when to trigger Article 50, to understand the likelihood of the FCA enforcing implementation of ongoing regulatory reforms within the next 2 years? Over to you, Paul, on that one.
Thank you. I think the answer to that, Martin, is that we did not at ICMA wait for the referendum. ICMA was in touch before the referendum with the UK authorities, including the new head of the FCA and the EU authorities, including the Commission and ESMA, and the euro area authorities, especially the ECB. And we will continue to be in touch with them in the period ahead, and we will continue to work closely with our members, for example, through our member committees, as you mentioned at the start.
Okay, thank you. The next question, what are the plans of ICMA to exchange intelligence with other trade groups at EU and UK level?
2 points on that. First of all, there is a meeting of JTAG going on at this moment to exchange intelligence at UK level. JTAG is the group of trade associations with offices in the UK, and obviously ICMA, with an office in the UK, is a member of JTAG. In addition, ICMA and AFME have jointly been hosting calls with around 20 different trade associations across Europe over the past year to exchange intelligence on the EU Capital Markets Union project, and we've set up a call specifically to discuss the implications of Brexit with this group of other 20 trade associations in a couple of weeks' time.
Very good, thank you. We have a call, we have a question which came in from Andrew Bowley at Numura, and here it is. It is apparent that MiFID II equivalence for the UK is going to be critical to the continued functioning of European capital markets. What is ICMA doing to make sure this is understood in Westminster and addressed before Article 50 submission? And will ICMA turn its attention to heightened MiFID II implementation focus to ensure no further delays?
Martin, just in response to Andrew on that, yes, we agree, we all agree equivalence is important. We think that the UK authorities are aware of that, but we will continue to be in touch with them and with the EU authorities and keep our members informed. We're all acutely aware of the challenge of MiFID II implementation, and we have a specific working group to deal with that.
Okay, thank you. We just had one more question just come in, which is Paul has stated that the UK will have to consider whether the provisions of existing directives, such as the Prospectus Directive or prospectively MiFID II, that have been transposed into UK law will be stripped out through new legislation. What is the likelihood that the UK will selectively strip out some, but not all, of such financial services legislation? Is this expected to be an area of horse trading between the UK and the EU?
The answer to the question, I think, is first of all, it's a very important issue. It's much too early to give a definitive view on what the UK authorities and the EU authorities will do. Clearly, equivalence will be one of the key issues that the UK and the EU will want to consider in discussing the issue in the period ahead. And when we know more about what view the authorities are taking, we will want to be in touch with members to talk to them about it.
Okay, thank you, Paul. Margaret, were there any other questions coming in?
No further questions.
Okay. Well, look, what I would, thank you very much, everybody, for joining this call today. I do hope it's been useful. It's really highlighted not only what we do know, but just how much we don't know at the moment about the way forward. And what I would recommend is that if you have questions, we have our help desk. You have the number on our website for our members. Please do phone up there or phone any of your contacts at ICMA directly. We'll do our very best to answer these questions as they come through during the coming period. And with that, unless there's anything from my colleagues in London, is there anything else that anybody would like to add?
No, I think that's fine, Martin.
Okay, I'd like to thank Paul and Lee very much, and thank you all for joining. And with that, we will close the call, please, Rosie, the operator. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining today's call. You may now replace your handsets. Thank you.